Alright. So, there's one more thing I wanted to talk about from chapter 14. So I think we're at day 23 now. Yep, day 23. Creation of five parts. No urgency on the homework yet. Now, the idea of integration by parts is to do the product rule backwards. Now, the product rule is a little delicate, so it's because there's two functions involved, and when you get the derivative, it has to be just so. F times G has derivative equal to the derivative of F times G plus F times the derivative of G. How are we going to turn this around? It's not a simple matter. To try and go backwards, you have to have two terms here, and they have to match just so. So we'll do the best we can. So the idea is integrate or take the antiderivative of both sides. Break up this derivative because there's a plus there. And the issue is usually you have one integral you're trying to figure out, not two. And usually you don't have two that are all nicely correlated like this. Right, where you just happen to have an integral factored like this so that the first factor over here has derivative equal to the first factor over here. Then the second factor here on the left happens to have derivative equal to the second factor here on the right. That's unlikely to just magically come up. So what we do is we solve for one of these. And it's symmetrical, so it's kind of arbitrary. So usually people solve for this one. And what I mean by that is, initially at the very beginning of the development, they solve for this one, and then this becomes their tool right here. So this is called integration by parts. The idea is you start here, right? And then what you get is some function minus another integral, right? And so this is so you hope that the new integral you get on the other side of the equation is easier. That's the idea. You can't just go straight to an antiderivative when you try and run the product rule backwards. Instead, you trade one antiderivative for another antiderivative. And show you an example of how this plays out. Start with something pretty simple. Actually, to make it more suggestive, let's... Yeah, no, I had it right the first time. Yeah, that's the best way to write. Okay. So, this one. Let me show you how the trade can be advantageous. So, this will be F. And this will be the G prime. And if I make this trade here, I'm going to have something that'll, so I'll have F, so okay, that'll be X, then I'll have G minus integral of what? F prime times G. Yes. Okay, I'm going to need to know some things. I'm going to need to know a derivative of f, and I'm going to need to know an antiderivative of g prime, right? G prime is e to the x, right? So I know the derivative of g, well, I need to know what g itself is. The derivative is easy, it's just 1. That's why this is a good trade. Now, let's see here. G of x, we're going to need to find an antiderivative of g prime. So if g prime is e of x, we need to take an antiderivative to get g, but we're in luck. We can actually get an antiderivative of e to the x, because e to the x is its own derivative and hence own antiderivative. And I'm going to leave off the plus c, because there's going to be another integral up here, which will get the plus c. I'm going to save the plus c till the end. So this is a good trade, because now this integral is just another e to the x antiderivative. But e to the x is its own antiderivative. And now I'll put in the plus c. There we go. And you can check this. Just take the derivative. And see if you get back x times e to the x. It actually works. You have to use the product rule, of course, here. And the derivative of e to the x here is just e to the x plus c, that has the derivative of 0. 1 times e to the x plus x. E to the x is its own derivative minus e to the x. Oh, look, the e to the x's cancel. So it really is running the product rule backwards. Now, the mistake that's commonly made with this sort of stuff is wishful thinking. People wish that you could just do the integrals separately. I mean, if you do this, what do you get? You get x squared over 2 times an e to the x. If I put in the dx's here, it's clearer that it's nonsense, right? Well, how can I have two factors of dx, whereas here I only had 1? And there's I could go into many reasons why this is nonsense, but the point is it's not correct, right? If you try this, the derivative will not be x times e to the x. What we get here is x times e to the x plus x squared over 2 times e to the x, which is not x times e to the x. If you remember to write the dx's in your integrals, you're a lot less likely to make this mistake. But I see people that leave off the dx's, and it makes it easier for them to think that something like this could work. It would be nice if that worked. It would be nice if it was that easy, but as we can see, it's a little more complicated. If you actually want to get the derivative of x e to the x, you have to work a little harder. Okay. So. That's integration by parts as seen in terms of running the product rule backwards. People have different notations for doing the same thing. And that's just a fact of history. Different notations have arisen. So, you know, I wrote this in terms of f and g. And in terms of primes, here's some other things for integration by parts. All right, so here's the first one we have. Since we usually like to start from the left, I'll write it this way. Right? So f times g prime dx equals f g minus integral f prime g dx. Right? That's what I had here. But if you remember differential notation, the differential of g is just its derivative times the differential of the input variable. So people will write it this way. Actually, let me back up. They will write it this way, but often because they like the differential notation, they put the g in the front on this term. Which is fine, the order of multiplication doesn't matter. The reason they do that is because then it lets them write things clearly in the differential notation. So you'll see this. And it's just a different notation for the same thing. People just wrote the order of the multiplication different, but A times B is B times A. No problem there. People also use different letters. A very popular choice is U and V. So you'll see this. But it's the same thing. Trickier, slightly more effective than we had before, but essentially the same trick will deal with it. Okay, there's not much different there than the x e to the x one, except I threw in a few more numbers. So you have to be a little bit more careful when you're actually finding the derivatives and the antiderivatives. Now, this will, let's say if I use the notation before, this would be the f and the g prime. If I use, say, the U and DV notation, then this would be the... just different notations, but it's the same idea. And in this case, say I use the U and V notation. This would be UV minus... oops. UV minus antiderivative of V du. So in this setup here, how do I figure out things? So the du is the derivative of u times dx. So the derivative is, I think, 5, right? Slope 5 there from the 5x constant 0. The dx just comes along for the ride when you're using the differential notation here. V is the antiderivative of this exponential. And you can write it very nicely as just V is the integral of dV, which makes sense as a bunch of tiny changes in V added up to get a total change in V. Okay, so what's this? That. And here, anybody got an idea how to get this integral? Don't need to do integration by parts for that, but there's another technique we need here.
U substitution?
Yeah. But we should probably use a different letter because we already had U meaning something here. So maybe we could call it W or something. So we have to remember that because it's an exponential to some function, right, we can't just do something like this. That only works if f of f happens to be just x itself, right? This doesn't work in general. It works if it's just x. And, you know, I've seen other mistakes of this nature where people do something like this. This is also wrong. We have e to the, we have our nice e to the x. Antiderivative is itself plus a constant in general. These are other examples of wishful thinking, right? So we really do need a U substitution here. I'll just call it W because I already used U for something else, so I'm going to avoid confusion. Okay, so dW, that would be W prime times dx is by our definition of the differential notation. So negative 7x plus 1 prime dx. Okay, the slope is going to be negative 7. And the dx just came along for the ride. You always need to find the differential of the variable you're making a substitution with. So in this case, W. You always need that differential. Because now we actually do something interesting with the dx, right? We have a dx here. We need to turn it into something in terms of w. So we solve this equation for dx. If dw is negative 7 dx, then dx is negative a seventh of dw. Okay, so put this stuff together. And so now V is going to be the integral of e to the W. Right? That's the gain of our substitution. Made the exponential a simple thing, just variable, so we can integrate it. The price we had to pay was this factor of negative a seventh, but that's not so bad. We can factor that out of the integral because it's a constant. So now it's just e to the w, so just like e to the x dx, e to the w dw has antiderivative e to the w. We're going to have another integral up here, so I'm leaving off the plus c until the very end of the, when I get the final answer. And the negative 1 seventh just came along for the ride. If we want to put this back in terms of x, we See, what was our formula for w? Negative 7x plus 1. And just put that formula back in if we need it. Okay. So let's remember what we're doing here. We needed two things, right? We started with picking what was our u, what was our dv, and then we had to figure out two things. We needed to know du, that's usually the easy one, because it's just basically a derivative of a little dx vector tacked on. And then we had to get an antiderivative, which sometimes is actual work. If you can't get the antiderivative of your dv, or if you can't integrate it, then that means you pick the wrong thing to be dv, because the whole point is to make this an integral you can get a formula for. So we got those. So we're going to use what we learned here. And what is v? So v is got that negative 1/7 on it. And then du is negative 1, sorry, where's du? Du is 5 dx. And we're not quite done yet, right? Because integration by parts is always it's always going to involve two integrals minimum, right? First, you transform this integral into this integral, and you have to figure out v by doing an integral. And now you still have one more integral to do. In this case, it's over here. Well, what can we do about that? Okay, let's call the whole integral. Okay, so we have all this stuff. We have to deal with that integral. But a lot of stuff factors out. The constants factor out. And if you look at this integral, it's actually the same as the integral we just did before, right? Look, e to the negative 7x plus 1 times a dx here. We don't have to really work as hard as we feared, because this integral is actually, after you pull out the constants, it's the same as the integral we just did here, right? That doesn't always happen, but in this case we got lucky. Right? So we don't have to actually do a second integral. Once we factor out the constant, we just use the same integral we got earlier. So then we put all this together. Sorry, the board is getting crowded here, isn't it? Okay. So the answer will be this. Should I simplify it ever so slightly? And then plus 5/7 times this thing. Reuse that integral formula, and now all that's left to do is at the very, very end we tack on a plus c. Okay. And If you start making the formulas a little more complicated, yeah, you should expect the antiderivative to get more complicated too. So, not as pretty as the first one, perhaps. But it gives you an idea of what could happen in a more generic case. I can have my calculator do this one. And I can compare it and see if my calculator and I are in agreement. That wasn't. And that's not good. It kind of hides everything. There we go. Okay, so I've got this, and let's see what my calculator would say. Now, this is how I would do it on my calculator. So TI-89, I think they call them TI-89 titaniums or something nowadays. This is pretty old. I've got a little second 7 gives you my integral symbol. Then I have to start typing some actual stuff. Okay, so open parenthesis, 5x plus 3 exponential negative 7x plus 1. My calculator has this 2 buttons to distinguish between negative and minus, right, to distinguish. And then to tell it how to do this integral, I just say, instead of putting a dx, you just have to say, in my calculator, put comma and then an x. So treat x as the input variable, find the antiderivative. And this would be my input. See what my calculator output was. Okay, it gives me this. Negative 35x plus 26 e to the 1 minus, times e to the 1 minus 7x all over 49. Okay. That doesn't look exactly what we got over here, but maybe if we simplify our result. The calculator is, of course, aggressively trying to simplify it as much as it can. Notice the calculator doesn't put on the plus C. Right? You may need to remember to do that if you're trying to get the general antiderivative. Is that our manual result here? Okay, so we've got this big thing. Well, I agree we can factor out a e to the 1 minus 7x, right? 1 minus 7x, negative 7x plus 1. Thing right here. Okay, so if we factor out that exponential, then what do we have? We have negative of the opposite of 5x plus 3 over 7 plus, well, what do we got here actually? 5 times negative 1, so actually minus 5 49ths. And can we simplify this? Yeah, and I think if we do, we'll get something that matches this. Multiply the top and bottom of our fraction of our first fraction by 7. So we have a common denominator. Okay, so 7 times 7 on the top times 7 on the bottom. Now we can put it all together. And what do we get? It looks like we're going to have negative
factor. So negative 35x, 21 plus 5 is 26.
Okay, so the one way you can look at this is integration by parts explains where this funny formula on my calculator came from. That's the same thing. So my calculator is not magic. All it can do is add, multiply, and divide, subtract very, very fast. Right? And everything on here, all the things about integrals and so on, everything is just programs that are all based on doing lots of arithmetic and just following rules like we do. These integrals are just automated things like integration by parts. Okay. So to some extent, your calculator can make pages and pages of tedious integration obsolete. If it's a nasty formula, the calculator can do it. I'm less likely to make an algebra mistake. And this stuff comes into play on its own. If you really want to understand what's going on, if you understand where the calculator got its formula, or you need to do something more abstract, where you don't have a formula for f, or you don't have a formula for your g prime here, and so you're just having to say, well, if I had the formula, it would look like this. And you use that in some analysis of it. Sometimes you do need to analyze functions you don't have formulas for. Maybe you just have a table of data for it or something. Now, on the other hand, maybe you don't have a calculator that can give you this formula. I'd recommend you get one, but if you don't, yes, you can do it by hand. It's not impossible. Any of the integrals my calculator can get a formula for, I could do them by hand if you give me enough time. I'm going to take some pictures.
integration by parts. Remember some kind of abbreviation like that if you want. And
there's an integral that we can do now and haven't been able to do before.
Remember we had all these rules, right? For antiderivatives.
Now there's something missing on this table. Right, so it's very natural. Okay, we have powers, we have exponentials. You'll notice that we have a logarithm here. Logarithms are antiderivatives of the reciprocal 1 over x function. What we're missing is the antiderivative of the logarithm function. It's always been missing from my antiderivative tables. If you're clever, you can figure it out with integration by parts. Okay. Now, there's not too many choices here. You can, the idea is, okay, what should be the u and what should be the dv, right? You could try u is 1 and dv is ln x dx, or you could try u is the log of x and dv is dx. Now, this one does not work because if you use this one, the problem is, the du is going to be 0. That's fine. Derivative of 1 is 0. But then the problem is getting the v, right? It's the integral of dv. And so now, you do this, you're going around in circles, right? You started with log of x dx, and you're not making the integral any easier this way. Right? You end up back where you started. Okay, so we're not going to do this one. You could factor it that way, but it doesn't work. That's the tricky thing about integration parts sometimes, is that there's more than one way you could imagine factoring out what is u, what is dv, and which factor works. Okay. So, trial and error. If any of them work, maybe you'll find it eventually. Okay, so here, the derivative of the logarithm function is 1 over x dx. So the differential of log of x is 1 over x times dx. And v, that's supposed to be a dx. Okay, dv is dx here. Well, that's pretty easy. That's just going to be x. V is just, if dv is dx, then v equals x will work. If you like, you can think of this as 1 times dx, if you want. So what has derivative 1? X has derivative 1. So does x plus any constant. We can pick the simplest one. Save the plus c till the end. So, okay, so we're going to use these ones. All right, so u is going to be the log of x. V is just going to be x. here we're going to have x for v, and then du is 1 over x times dx. And that's where the magic happens. You didn't have any right to expect this to happen, but the x and the 1 over x are going to cancel. So they cancel. So this is just the integral of dx. So that's just going to be x. So for my final answer, I will have x times the log of x minus x, and tack on the plus c at the very end. So now we can fill this in our table. It's x times the log of x minus x plus c. Questions or comments about this? Okay, so here's integration by parts for definite integrals. Basically the same, except you have to tack on the limits. Okay. So I have an integral, say it goes from x equals a to x equals b. And so say I have functions u of x and b prime of x dx. So what is this? If you figure out the general antiderivative, then to get this definite integral, some signed area under a curve, you have to plug in b, you have to plug in a, take the difference. Okay, so how would that work? So okay, we'd have to plug in b. And plug in a and take the difference. And we have to do the same over here. Right? Well, the result of doing that will just be what we call the definite integral of this one. And people like to abbreviate this. Right? So you'll see something like this. They put a little vertical line to mean plug in B, plug in A, take the difference. And then use the differential notation as well.
You can write something very succinct.
I put the x equals on there for emphasis, so plug in x value. So for example, let's see here. What if we wanted to do integral from 0 to 1 of x times e to the negative x? U dv. So we're going to have u and v evaluated at x equals 1 and x equals 0, computing the difference, and we're going to subtract off another integral.
Huh? So of u dv, we have v du. And this is a good trade because I've chosen u to have a very nice derivative. Right? The derivative of x is just 1. U is x, then du is just dx. Now what about dv here? Okay. So v is the integral of dv. You can make a substitution like before. Negative x can be w. So if w is negative x, then dw is negative dx. So dx is negative dw. So this becomes e to the w times negative dw. And so what is that? Well, factor out a minus 1. And then you've just got e to the w dw. So I'll just have antiderivative e to the w. So that means, now that we know what v and du are, we have something we can write out in terms of x's. So we're going to have uv, so that'll be x times v, which is negative e to the w, so I guess that's negative e to the negative x, because w is negative x. So we'll have that. And we're going to have to plug in 1 and 0 and take the difference. And we have to subtract the integral from 0 to 1 of what? Okay, v. So that's negative e to the negative x times du, which is just dx. Do it. Yeah, okay, so we already did the e to the negative x integral. It comes out negative e to the negative x. We're just going to have to do it again. So we have negative x e to the negative x at 0 and 1. And then we do this integral, and we'll get these negatives cancel, so we're just going to get another negative e to the negative x because it's just like that integral we did a moment ago. Plug in 0 and 1. In this case, we can actually factor some stuff, so it's actually negative. I got this right. Yeah. Negative x plus 1, if I factor stuff out, times e to the negative x, and we're going to evaluate at 1 and at 0. So what do you get? Okay, plug in 1. We get negative 2 times e to the negative 1 minus what we get at 0, which is negative 1, right? 0 plus 1 times e to the negative 0. So you get, after you deal with all the minus signs, let's see, e to the 0 is 1. So we have negative 1, so that's plus 1 times e to the 0, which is 1. So this is all just 1. So you get 1 minus 2 divided by e. Which is a small number. Because I think e is 2.7. So yeah, about 0.26. Okay. Questions or comments about this stuff? All these formulas can be kind of dry. The
main case where some of this stuff actually comes up in my experience is that formulas like this, graph these things, they look like this. A and B are positive numbers and constant. So the graph will look something like this. It'll go up, and it'll go up to some maximum value. So it'll be some kind of hump, and then it'll come down. But it doesn't, you know, go way down and go negative. In fact, this will never go negative when x is positive. Instead, after the hump, it'll exponentially decay, approximately. So it'll get really close to zero. When x is large, this will be really teeny tiny. But it never quite gets there. And so this is a good model for some things where they get started and things are going well. Things are really, picking up speed, but then after a while things start to slow down and things never quite run out completely, but they're getting closer and closer to almost all gone, and eventually they're as good as gone because it's so tiny. So this kind of simple model can capture the shape of a curve of, say, some natural resource that you extract, and it's not a renewable resource, so it eventually runs out. So the idea is maybe it's an oil well or something, and you get to, at the beginning, you get better and better at extracting stuff from it. You put in more and more pumps, and better pumps, and you're getting more and more stuff out. But eventually, you reach diminishing returns where there's just not so much stuff left to get out. So no matter how hard you try, you're going to face the situation where the more you extract, the harder it's going to be to get any more out. You have to drill deeper or pump more of the fracking fluids in there or whatever. And things peter out, and eventually the production is so little that it's not worth bothering anymore. Right? It never runs out completely, it just gets closer and closer to nothing. And so if you're dealing with this kind of thing, and say you want to know the area under a curve like this, right? Pick a letter. What's the next letter? L, whatever, right? If I want to know the area under this curve out to some L there, right? Well, that's going to be an integral, right? And you might want to know, what's the integral going to be? You might even want to know it as a formula in terms of that A and that B parameter. Right? Because you may be interested in understanding, if that A and B parameter, which maybe I estimate them by plotting points and fitting a curve, if as they change, how does it affect, say, the area under this curve or something? You can actually do this. Make this the U, this is the DV. And I'll skip a few steps here.
Let's see here. So the du is a dx. The v, you'll just get a negative 1 over b term popping out. So you get this. And what happens there? Okay. So you get... this term, and then over here we'll have plus, actually, okay, if I do the integral here, again, I'll skip a step, and it looks like this. And you plug in the 0 and the L, and you plug in L, you plug in 0, you take the difference. So, how does I plug in L? Put 0. So skipping a few steps and simplifying here, what do we have about this? That's from actually the zero term. It'll be a negative that when you subtract the value at zero, it gets canceled, and this, when you plug in zero, it's just one. And then here, you get some other stuff. It's going to be AL, this A times L plus 1. Well, you gotta be careful. AL over B plus A over B squared. And then... Now the e to the negative bl, this is that term is tiny if b times l is large. So people actually talk about what happens in the limit, so to speak, where if you imagine moving the l further and further out and find the area under the whole curve, and then they put, instead of putting an L there, they put an infinity. Right? If you do that, you get this tiny thing will just go to zero in the limit, so you have a very simple formula. So that's actually very good news. If you just take this cutoff value and pretend it's a really big number, right? So you're interested in the, all of, you imagine this is production and X is time, and so this is all the future production of this oil well or whatever. And you get a very surprisingly simple formula by taking that limit, because you can just ignore this tiny leftover part. It just represents the area under this tail here of the curve, which is, gets very small. So you get a simple answer of, if you can estimate the parameters A and B from your data, it's easy to get an estimate of the area under this whole curve. So that's why people are actually get interested in this stuff. And this is an example of where integration by parts can actually
come up to help you understand something. There's other examples where this, where integration by parts might come in handy. So if you remember a consumer surplus and producer surplus, right? Let's see here. P is unit price, X is quantity, bought and sold. We have some kind of a demand curve, and we have some kind of a supply curve. Okay, so the demand curve is the one on the top. And the supply curve is the one on the bottom. When the price, the way you can remember is if the price gets higher, people want to sell more of it because it's more profitable. When the price gets higher, the demand, the X, the quantity of the demand, it goes back, right? People don't want to buy as much. Or the other way, prices go down, people want more, right? So the demand curve goes down and to the right, or if you like, up and to the left, because the supply curve goes up and to the right. Anyways, so we have consumer surplus is that area up there, producer surplus is that area up there. Where the curves cross, that is your free market equilibrium, right? If you ignore stuff like sales tax and so on, right? The market would converge, we hope at least, towards supply equaling demand, and usually does. If there's no sales tax or anything like that to separate the price that the consumer pays and the price that the seller sells at. Okay, so of course we have to solve an equation, right? You have to figure out, okay, what is the quantity at which the curves meet, and what is the price at which they meet. Book uses bars for those special quantity and prices. So the producer surplus, okay, you get the area of top minus bottom, so P bar minus supply curve. And so if your demand function or your supply function is a logarithmic function, say, then you're going to need integration by parts to get the formula, or you're going to have to memorize the formula for the logarithm. Producer surplus. You could have similar things if you were looking at something here where somebody, for some reason, the formula needed integration by parts. There's some examples, and this stuff can come up. I think sometimes, you know, a logarithmic supply curve might make sense. It might be the best kind of curve. for fitting your data. So, in any case, integration by parts is covered in section 14.3. So I just picked out some problems from there. Some of them are just straight up figure out the antiderivative. Others are involving some kind of story problem. I guess one final thing I can tell you is that it is also possible to integrate by parts repeatedly. Show you one example of that in the last 5 minutes here. So, what if I had this thing? Okay. If I do the integration by parts, this is the antiderivative of e to the x is easy, so that's a good choice for the e to the x dx, good choice for the dv, right? So e to the x is the v, u is the x cubed again, minus, and I need v du. Okay. So e to the x times, okay, the derivative of x cubed is 3x squared, so I get a 3x squared. But I want the differential, the du, so I put on the dx, right? A little bit of change in x will cause a little change in x cubed. That's about 3x squared times that little change in x. But now how do I do this one? I need to integrate by parts again, right? So, let's see. So write it like this. About instead of U and V, maybe P and Q this time, right? Different letters, right?
Thank you.
I integrate by parts again. I'm still not done. Whoops. Some negative there. Other letters. How about F, D, G? Okay, the derivative of 6x is 6. The antiderivative of e to the x is just e to the x. And then here we're going to have g df. Technically the order doesn't matter, but for teaching purposes I'm trying to get the things to match. Okay, so then e to the x 60x. Okay, finally, this integral I can just do the normal way. Right? Just 6e to the x. So you put all of these together, and the result of this is that you get three terms. First, there's the x cubed e to the x. Then you have minus this thing. And then you have minus, well, okay, it's minus that, right? But inside this integral we had this, and then we had minus another integral. And that integral worked out to be 6 e to the x. No, I did. That's 6 x e to the x. 6 x e to the x. In front of the last minus, minus 6 e to the x. Okay, if you untangle all those minuses, it's x cubed minus 3x squared plus 6x minus 6 and e to the x, and put a plus c on at the end, right? So that's
really tricky integrals. It's possible to even use the technique repeatedly, and basically every time we traded a derivative we traded an antiderivative for a derivative. We had to anti-differentiate e to the x, but it was a good trade because we got a derivative of a power of x, and these powers of x kept going down, right, from a cube to a square to just an x, and eventually to just a constant, no powers of x. So that's a good hint for the integration by parts, is if you just have a power of x factor, make that the u, and you can integrate by parts, assuming it's a positive integer power, at least eventually it gets down to a constant.
Okay. And that wraps things up here. Hopefully I'll get the tests all back to you on Thursday. And we will be starting chapter 15 on Thursday. That is about functions of several variables. These things are kind of interesting. You graph them, and instead of a curve, it's a surface in 3D space. So we'll see that on Thursday. And I'll be in my office this afternoon if you have any questions.